Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, it's me again, Steve Mileto, back here at the Heart of Georgia RESA with Thinking, Learning, and Leading K-12 podcast. And joining me today is Dr. Joe Hutchinson, who is the representative for the state of Georgia from Thinking Maps. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Hey, Steve, glad to be here.
Thanks. Great to have you. I appreciate you joining me. We're going to be talking about Thinking Maps. Joe, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about you and your background, and then we'll go into the other questions.
All right, happy to. Steve, I'm glad that you invited me, and I'm looking forward to this interview. I've been in education for the last 24 years. It's hard to believe that it's flown by that quickly, but I started out as a middle school teacher, then to move to high school, and then moved into administration. Been in administration the last 10-11 years. Been an assistant principal, as well as a ninth grade principal, and then a middle school principal. So I've kind of been right there in the middle most of the time.
Excellent.
But did that, and then just had a fantastic opportunity thrown my way. Was kind of not sure if I wanted to move into the educational consulting realms, but made that choice, and it's been going fantastic. So this is really, I've had 24 years in education. This is my first year on the other side of the desk, per se, but it's been going real well.
Appreciate you sharing that. And I got to ask real quick, because so you, for the ninth grade one, was that like a ninth grade school or academy?
No, it actually was at a high school. There was 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. We were lucky enough that we had a middle school right next door, just
gotcha.
Down the bus ramp. And the county built a new middle school and moved them out. And then we took over that building. Well, the logical thing to do, what I advocated for, was let's take our 800 freshmen and move them over to this building to create a, you know, at that time it was pretty cutting edge to have a ninth grade academy.
Most definitely.
Both of my personal children have gone through a ninth grade academy, and they absolutely loved that setup to not be in the mix with the 10th, 11th, and 12th graders during that transition. So we were lucky enough that we had our own building. Now, I was still an assistant principal, but I was able to work with curriculum. I was able to work with, you know, just that staff, obviously discipline, but really was able to take care of the physical plant and all aspects of a ninth grade building.
Excellent. Tell me why you think that we need to help children learn thinking skills.
Well, Steve, my answer is going to come from my own children. It's going to come from my experience in education. I learned long ago with my own biological children that they really enjoyed having Google Mom and Google Dad. They knew they could ask any question, and just we tell them exactly what to do. If it was, what time do I eat, or what am I going to eat?
Okay, I like this description. Having kids of my own, yes.
Yeah, it's just
tell me.
I've got Google Dad, and he'll tell me what to do next.
What a great analogy. I love it.
It was very disheartening, you know, because our job is to prepare our students in school, but also our biological children to be ready to go out into the world.
Yes.
Now, I've got a son in college, and I think I was able to turn off Google Dad and Google Mom quick enough that he is doing very well. But just having that realization, having the opportunity to see Thinking Maps, and we're going to talk more about what Thinking Maps is, but the learning process, the thinking process, the organizational process, and giving the learning process back to the students, where they are organizing and not just regurgitating, where they are organizing their thoughts, organizing notes in class if they are in a lecture per se, and knowing how to do that, how to organize themselves. Now, granted, please do not misconstrue that I am all for cutting the apron strings and never helping our students. I still find that we need to help our students back plan. You know, hey, I've got a project due April the 3rd. Okay, so we're going to plan all the way back so we know we're staying on track. And I do feel like we need to do with our students. But for them to know, as an administrator, I found it very aggravating. We would take a state test, and so many times our students didn't know what the CRCT was asking. You know, they did not comprehend what the question was, and that hurt them in the long run because they didn't know how to answer the question. Now, on the flip side of that, I had plenty of students that had figured out, in their mind, figured out the game of school. And what I mean by that is they could memorize anything, they could regurgitate, and they knew, hey, if it's multiple choice, you know, I can deduce my way down to the right answer. And if I didn't feel like that was the depth of knowledge was not there with our students. Now, where we're turning the learning process over to them and the students are understanding and organizing when they can read a question or in a discussion hear a question that they want me to compare and contrast, that's very different from when someone is asking them to describe something or asking them to, you know, in an analogy. So that's where the thinking maps comes in.
Gotcha. And
that's the power of it, because the student, you know, it's not a worksheet, it's not a model that they just fill in the blank. They are organizing their thoughts, and they know how to internalize, or, you know, I don't want to say memorize, but they know what to do with that information to be able to bring it back at a later time.
And in the same note, so when we're talking about why students need help with this, what do you think teachers need help with? What's their greatest need in trying to help kids learn thinking skills?
Well, that's a great question. I'll turn the mirror to myself. You know, being in education, being a teacher, being an administrator in a support role, I knew that I didn't have all the answers. You know, I had come through school. I was in high school back in the 80s, and I pretty much had figured out the game of school per se, and really all I had from my middle school to high school was lecture. And I remember just like it was yesterday in social studies, and I know you were a social studies teacher,
yes.
But I had a teacher that had a spiral-bound notebook of lecture notes, and she had it for must have been 30 years.
Wow.
And every day she just flipped over the page and started reading, and we took notes, and that was how we learned. And, you know, many times in education we might ourselves have the attitude of, well, I taught it, they better get it. You know, it's their responsibility to get that information. And, you know, letting go of that and letting go of the mindset that the kids today learn the same way that I learned, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And maybe that's not the right phrase to use, but obviously in this, the information age is quite different from what you and I grew up
yes.
in. And what they're exposed to. You know, I mentioned a few minutes ago about being Google Dad. Well, every child that I know in my school was, you know, Google as well, because with bring your own technology, with a smartphone, you know, whatever you were talking about in class, they could find a world of information at their fingertips, you know, by just pulling it up on their smartphone. And you and I did not have that.
You got that right. I had a TI-30 that was a little wedge-shaped thing, and I can remember, playing Pong and having an Atari 2600 or something like that. That was the extent of my technology for the longest time.
You know, my extent with a calculator was we were trying to figure out how we could spell words.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Turn it upside down.
Look what I spelled. Check it out.
So
I'm on that planet. You know, one of my favorite stories with that is that my kids look at me and they have these extremely powerful calculators, and you know, and you think about all that they can do with those calculators, and I'm not quite sure. It was amazing what I thought I could do with that calculator,
mm-hmm.
but they were tough. I actually ran over mine with my bicycle, and it still kept on working. Had to push on it a special way to make the lights come on, but hey.
You know, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but just with the technology, I was watching the news this morning, and they were talking that Voyager, which we launched
yes.
from Earth 35 years ago, was now leaving our solar system.
Wow.
And they were talking about the technology that was on that is on that spacecraft, that there's an 8-track tape player. And that the memory on the computer is less than what's in our cell phone now. I mean, it is,
wow.
And here it is. And they were saying that they planned that if there was life out there, that if this was the first thing that they, their first exposure to Earth, you know, they wanted to make sure there was a good representation. So they put some music, you know, they put Bach, Beethoven, and Chuck Berry,
right.
All on a vinyl disc. And they also, this morning, were saying that they put 50 languages of just well-wishing, you know, greetings,
right.
From Earth. So anyway, life was so different then to what it is now. So to go back to your question of, you know, what do we need help with our students, you know, I think we need to turn the mirror around to ourselves as educators in, you know, engaging students is extremely important. You know, I thrive,
yes.
In a cooperative learning environment. My younger son loves hands-on. That is just the way he learns. And, you know, the classes that he gets to do things in, science and so forth, or social studies where he gets to do a project, he really can demonstrate his level of mastery because that's just what he enjoys doing. And many times as an educator, I know it's difficult to let go and to have a room of chaos per se, you know, because students are working and talking.
Right.
And that's one place we've got to let go. And we've got to begin to give those students back the ownership of the learning process. You know, I'm sure you've said it or I've heard it, you know, that you, the teacher, should not be the tiredest individual at the end of the day, you know, and that's usually the way it works. Teachers are dead tired because they've worked so hard,
right.
And the kids are bebopping out the door because they, you know, it should be the other way around. So, you know, the concept with thinking maps is that the students are taking that responsibility and they are learning how to organize and how to think rather than just memorizing and regurgitating.
So let's use that to lead into, you know, we keep hearing you talk about it, so why don't you tell us about thinking maps? Tell us what that's all about.
Okay, well, thinking maps, I can tell you, first of all, I'm going to start at the end and kind of go backwards and catch up. You know, I've been an administrator for well over 10 years. I've had the pleasure of implementing thinking maps twice. I learned a lot the first time and did a better job the second time. And, you know, what is thinking maps? Thinking maps has been around
So let me interrupt you just a second. So I want to make sure that they understand what you just said. You've actually implemented it in a school setting.
Yeah, twice.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. You know, so you've had the experience of working with your teachers and seeing it implemented with children.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Seeing the results before and then after. And I will address that as I tell you about. Thinking Maps has been around well over 20 years. It was originally, it was a doctoral dissertation of David Hierley. Now, David took some recent brain research. Now, this was, again, 20 years ago, where they had discovered or figured out that the brain categorizes all information into 8 visual patterns. They also figured out that the brain learns 80%, the human body learns 80% of what it learns, 80% of it is visually. So he took that information, and some people out there in podcast land might say, yeah, these are graphic organizers. And you know, I would only debate that with you in that they're so much more than just a graphic organizer. You know, you
okay.
could put that label on them. The great part about thinking maps is there are only 8 maps. And the language arts teacher uses 8 maps, the same 8 maps that the math teacher uses, the same 8 maps that the PE coach uses, and I'll talk about that as well, how you could use them in a connection class or an elective class. But, you know, the music teacher uses the same 8 maps. And the great thing that I love seeing when we're working with schools is the language arts teachers and maybe the math teachers, when they realize that in both of those academic areas, we're still doing a lot of the same things. For an example, language arts, we do analogies. Now, Steve, what do you think of visually when I say the word analogy?
Think of the nightmare I have when I do them on standardized tests, and I go, I forget what it is I'm doing. But you know, I think of having a word with a colon, and then another word.
Okay, that's exactly what I think of, and I think of the Miller's analogy test from grad school or something. But you know, when we're in training and we explain to the math teachers that we do analogies in math too, but we call them rationales, and every time we do that, all the light bulbs go off. I realize we're using different words.
Right.
The semantics are different, but we're doing the same thing, and you would use the same map. With thinking maps, there are 8 visual maps, and they all have a specific purpose, and we train those teachers as well as the students in knowing which map to use. For an example, you're asking me to describe something, and there is a specific visual pattern that we would use to do that. Or you might ask me, or if I read on a test, might ask me to compare and contrast something. Again, could be language arts. It could be social studies that I'm comparing and contrasting some, you know, 2 different nations or something. And there is a specific map that we use for that, and the students know what that is. You know, many times when we were working with thinking maps, and I'm going back to an earlier question, where do we need to learn? Our teachers want to help so much to the point of, okay, I want to make some Xerox copies of these maps.
Yes.
So the maps are perfect. Well, that is not what we're shooting for. We want the student to create the map, A, to know which map to create based on what the question is, if it's compare and contrast or describe or define or whatever it is, to know in their mind which map to use and then how to use it. Now, the greatest joy that I have is, you know, when we're in a class and they're taking the CRCT and the students will take their scrap paper and literally draw a map to plan out their thoughts, you know, to answer that question. That's when you really know that the students are taking ownership of their learning process. And this is just a side note. This was precious. It was neat. The other day I was in a school, and the assistant principal of discipline came in and said she needed to see the principal because they were dealing with a student. And she said, I had the student in their office and asked the student, you know, you've broken this rule, you've broken this rule, and just a lot of different rules. And she started asking the student, you know, what were the infractions that, you know, what rules had been broken? And so he took a piece of paper and made a map, actually a tree map, which is one of the 8 maps.
Wow.
Because that school system has used thinking maps, and it was just easier for him to make a map of all the infractions, all the rules that he had broken. But that was the way that he organized his thoughts. And, you know, that makes you feel really good, not necessarily in that situation. But
it's great, though, that obviously it's sunk in.
And a student knows what the question is and knows how to organize those thoughts. So thinking maps is a visual representation of a student. When I say a student, we all assume we're talking about a 5-year-old to an 18-year-old. I'm 45 and I'm still a student.
I got you.
And I use thinking maps, you know, in my day-to-day life. You know, I'm planning a trip. I use a flow map because I can actually see the sequence. That's a sequencing visual pattern of, you know, a map of where I'm going. I mentioned PE teachers. It's always fun when we're doing training when the PE teachers or the coaches figure out that they can use a flow map, again, for sequencing. And we've actually had coaches that will sequence a football game.
Neat.
And, you know, the plays that they might use. Or they might use a tree map, which breaks something down, you know, down to offense and defense and special teams or, you know, if it was football. And it's always great to see that aha moment when they figure out, okay, yeah, we're not talking about students as 5 to 18. We're talking about everybody. And this just helps me visualize and organize my thought process and my learning process.
Yeah, that's something that I wish I'd had this type of information back when I was in high school and in college, because I struggled with, I did a lot of memorization of things and just constantly trying to drive it through my head about, you know, I'd write the information over and over and over again until it was becoming second nature, where, you know, the idea of being able to create a chart that helps me put it into categories and to think about it in a pictorial way, sort of.
You know, Steve, you know, saying that, I struggled the same when I was in high school and had to memorize a lot. I was, my son had a chemistry test last week, and he asked me, hey, will you help me study? And I said, absolutely. And I'm going to murder this terminology, but it was a chart on ions, you know, these chemical compounds and the ions. And he had to memorize, like NaCl, sodium chloride, he had to memorize those, and as well as the subscript numbers, the ions, the plus ones, and all that. And he was just trying to memorize them. And it hit me the moment he handed me the piece of paper. I said, this would be a perfect tree map because it classifies. And I said, hang on. And I said, what do you see here on this piece of paper? And it took him a minute to figure out, you know, here's my dad, which works for thinking maps. He's probably talking about a thinking map. And he said, you're right. That would be a perfect tree map because it organized it. There were four categories, the negatives, the plus ones, plus twos, plus threes. So he had four of those categories. Anyway, to make a long story short, he created a visual pattern. And he could organize it. Now, was he still memorizing? Yes. I mean, because that's what he was asked to do, is to memorize that. But to organize it into those categories using that visual pattern, that's what thinking maps is all about.
Excellent. That's neat, too, that you're able to – I could just – sorry. If that was my son, the eyes would be rolling. Dad, you're going to pull out one of those thinking maps, aren't you?
No, well, son. I was leaving that part out, but that's exactly what he said.
That's funny. I can see that happening now. Yes. Okay, Dad, go right ahead. And then he actually uses it, which is even better. So, ha.
That's right. He got a good grade on that test.
As we kind of bring this to a close, one of the things I'd like you to do is when teachers and educators, administrators attend the training from Thinking Maps, can you think of just one thing that if nothing else, when they leave that training, what they think about, that they remember, that they try and use?
You know, there are so many positive things that come out of our trainings. Now, I've been to many trainings, and I think most people enter the room of professional learning when they're asked to go to a training, like, oh, okay, I got to sit here for a day and
no,
do this.
Not me. No.
But the best part, and I can say, I know this sounds biased, but I've been exposed to a lot of professional learning. I have been to the trainings. I have re-delivered trainings. And it might have been trainings that were technologically based. It might have been other, you know, reading programs or writing programs. You know, the one that stuck, the one that I've never had a teacher or student come up and say, that didn't work for me. You know, it's always the opposite. And, you know, the one thing in our one-day training when we go to a school, and again, we're meeting with every staff member from language arts or, excuse me, content areas to elective teachers, you know, band, PE, home ec, you know, not that they have home ec anymore, but family and consumer sciences, everybody's there. And we do the training and we expose them to all eight maps and we teach them how to introduce them to the students. And it takes about 10 minutes for them to figure out, okay, this is not something else on my plate. This is not changing my curriculum. It's not changing Common Core. It's not.
Right, I mean,
It has nothing to do with that. The short amount of time that it takes for them to go, okay, this is going to help our students. This is for them to take over the learning process, not something else that's on my plate that I have to now do and document or something like that. To see every content area, yep, you know, that will work great for me in math, in social studies, science, PE, art, music, whatever it is, and how practical it is, because now our students, as I've said three or four times, are taking that ownership. They're taking the learning process, not away from the teacher, but it's no longer on the teacher's shoulders. you know, the students are learning how to organize and how to, you know, organize their thoughts, organize the information that they have, and taking over the learning process. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. It makes perfect sense, and I appreciate it. When you participate, when you run activities, you usually have something that, at least if they do this when they leave here.
Well, I hope that I conveyed that one thing that it seems to work every time is, all right, you know, I came in here thinking that this was going to be, you know, something else that I've got to do as a teacher, but this will make a difference for my students, no matter what grade, because we train, you know, pre-K through 12th grade. It doesn't matter the grade. It doesn't matter the level. We do honors teachers. We do special ed. We do ELL. It's for everybody because it offers the differentiation. And this has been pretty neat, but the State Department has contacted us and said, hey, Thinking Maps really provides the perfect evidence for TEKS. And so they want to have some discussions on using Thinking Maps as that evidence, that differentiation piece.
Excellent.
And how that can help with our new TEKS that we're rolling out statewide. So I hope that that's what they're walking away with is, this really works. And I'm telling you as a consumer, because I've done it twice,
right.
It works. It really, it's not top down. It's something where we are enabling our students to succeed.
That's excellent. What's neat about your one thing is that it's the whole concept,
yeah.
That this isn't just something, this is something that works. And I hope that you'll see that it's not about putting more on your shoulders. Instead, it's something to make it easier,
yes,
in working
absolutely.
With the kids. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Well, as we close out, first of all, just Joe, thank you very much for spending time with me today. I'd like you to just tell us where we find you on the web, how we find Thinking Maps on the web, and you know, if it's on Facebook, Pinterest, or all those types of places.
We are working on our social media side, but you know, Thinking Maps is www.thinkingmaps.com. We are a national company based in North Carolina and Texas. And I am the representative for Georgia, and will be happy to help you with anything. I truly want to be a resource. Coming out of the education realms, I think I understand. I know that I would want a resource rather than a vendor per se.
Right, right.
And I hope people will take me up on that. Hey, we spend time going out, doing parent. Involvement meetings at nighttime.
You know,
we have schools that'll call that are not even customers and say, hey, will you come? We're thinking about doing Thinking Maps. Will you come and just do a little 15-minute overview for our parents at a parent night? Absolutely. Because as a principal, I knew how important that was to be reaching out to the community. So thinkingmaps.com, my email is jhutchison@thinkingmaps.com. Do you want me to say my
phone number
and all that?
Go ahead and say that. Go ahead.
Okay, 706-818-5632. Be happy for you to give me a call, and we'll be happy. I want to just bring information and let you see the power of Thinking Maps.
Excellent. Well, thank you again. I appreciate it. And everyone, you know, it's an amazing I don't want to call it a product. It's it's something that you can help your children, bring them up to the levels of understanding that they need to be.
That's right.
So we thank you for your time today. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to be in the heart of Georgia.
Hey, glad to have you here. Take care, Joe.
Okay.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching Learning Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching Learning Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.